Okay, thanks Paul, thanks for the introduction. It's great to be back on the show today. We're obviously exploring over 10 shows the 10 characteristics of success for small and medium-sized enterprises. So these characteristics have emerged from a very detailed and in-depth research process at the University of Kent and the Kent Business School. And over the last sort of 12 months, we've been exploring what they really mean to business owners. So we've spent a lot of time researching this within organisations, and now it's time for us to also re-engage and look at how they apply back into those organisations. So we've been bringing in various experts over the last 12 months who have an insight on these particular characteristics, and today we're focusing on the systemizer. We're following on from a session and last session which also focused on the systemizer, because we were looking at that characteristic from two particular perspectives. One was a people focused perspective and one was a process focused perspective. And so with Len last time we explored the people focus, and today we'll explore the process focus with Professor of Operations and Supply Chain Jay Deep, who has 25 years of teaching and research experience at the Haskayne School of Business in the University of Calgary, and has done lots of research as well into how organisations perform and grow and use process and operations processes to achieve that. So welcome to the show, Jay Deep.
Thank you very much, Simon.
And just a very quick background to the systemizer. The systemizer is about the processes within an organization that makes it work and function. So we're not talking about bureaucracy, we're not talking about added paperwork. What we're talking about is what are those systems and approaches that organizations today can use to ultimately respond appropriately to their market needs and deliver whatever it is, whether it's a product or a service, to meet the needs of those consumers at a cost and a quality level that is expected. So that's what the systemizer is about, and with Jay Deep we're going to explore the particular process elements and why it's so important to think about these things from a strategic level as leaders and entrepreneurs of small and medium-sized enterprises. So the first thing, Jay Deep, I guess we had a question when we were exploring this before we came on the show, was the difference between a product focus and a process focus, and why that's really an important thing to get our heads around.
Well, I think, Simon, the key thing to understand is everything is a process. So, to me, it's not products, it's processes. In order to get a successful product into the market, you need effective processes, whether that's the new product development process. So you might use project management techniques, but that includes processes. Or it's after you've designed your product and you want to manufacture it, or if it's a service, providing a service, do it in a repeatable, consistent manner. So to me, the key is getting the right process, because if you don't have the right process, first of all, you may not actually get the right product designed or service. And secondly, even if you have it designed right, you may not be able to, your supply chain may not be able to supply it in the consistent manner over time as would be required for success.
Fascinating. And, I mean, given all the research that you've undertaken within operations and supply chain, what would you say defines success in this sort of context of working and delivering products and services?
The key thing, I believe, is linking your process to your corporate strategy. So what does that mean? Well, as an entrepreneur or somebody running a company, you need to know what your corporate strategy is. So if you are succeeding on low cost, which of course often many Western and other advanced nations don't compete on, it might be the lower labor cost countries that compete on cost, what you typically tend to do is have a very standardized process without much variation in what you do. And so what's the focus of that? Well, you train the employee to do simple things very effectively. And therefore, over time, your cost decreases. You get volumes, your cost decreases. And that's how you succeed. Whereas if your demand or your product is more complex, so it requires flexibility, then the way of doing things different. So if you are providing consulting services, you generally use teams. And each person is trained to do a lot of different things. And so those would be the two extremes. So if you want flexibility or you want quick delivery, then your processes would be geared towards doing that. So for example, if you need a product or service delivered quickly, you may use high technology to communicate with the team. You may use Skype, for example, to get a team together and make decisions. Whereas if you're competing on low cost, you may not do that because it's expensive. So you'd rather just do the same thing and not worry about getting teams to be designing the next product or responding to the next customer.
What you're saying is, I mean, is fascinating, because what it raises for me is the challenge of having certain experts and specialists within organisations. So there's often a depth of knowledge which can speak to silos forming, as opposed to actually being able to look across organisations and the different processes and seeing how we can break down the silos and work in more matrix-style systems and processes. So as a leader and an entrepreneur of that organisation, many entrepreneurs will have set up and developed the business themselves. They'll have a particular specialism and an expertise in part of the business, if not all of the business. How is it they can achieve that greater level of productivity from the processes that they implement within the business?
So we just talked about the extreme. So at one extreme, you have processes that are geared towards very little flexibility, but high volume and low cost. At the other extreme, it's very customized. So it might be like an artist making a customized painting for a customer. And that is typically low volume, but it's geared towards what the customer wants. Now, clearly, if you are a smart manager, you want the benefits of both. Ideally, if you could satisfy unlimited variety at very low cost, you probably have things made. But the real world doesn't work that way. However, managers try to get there. And so the way to do that is through a matrix structure. So, and I can give you an example. There's a case about a commercial insurer in the UK where this insurer serves corporate clients. And so the client might have different needs, like insurance, perhaps pension planning for their employees, perhaps insurance planning for their employees, and maybe other services that they provide to the employees. So initially, for example, the company was geared in a way towards more flexibility, where they had people grouped by functions. So they had a group that would, say, do pension planning. They had a group that might do insurance planning for these corporate clients.
And I guess with functional, you'd also have maybe a finance department, an HR department.
That is correct.
And they would all be doing their own specific tasks within that organization.
That is correct. So that's very flexible. Mm. So if you go to the let's say the pension planning department, as a group, they could do anything that a client wants. However, the problem with this was, let's say a client needed something done on pensions, something done on insurance, and maybe other services. Maybe there was something to do with their finances. The problem was, their file had to move from function to function. And the client never knew who is handling it, because it just goes into a black hole. And so while there was flexibility, there wasn't the volume. Things went down very slowly. And this is a problem because clients can get upset. And so this company looked at, well, how do we reorganize? They went to a matrix structure where they took some people from, let's say, pension planning, maybe even one person. Let's say you take another person from insurance planning and from another department and now make them a team. And this team would be geared towards satisfying a few corporate clients. So the advantage was they now worked as a team. So if a client called and said, well, I need these things done, this is the team that would do it for them. There's a few advantages there. One, the customer knows who is responsible. In the previous functional organization, a tendency for the employee would be to say, I did my job. Delays were not my fault. It went into the next department, and I know what happened. Whereas now, it's the team that's doing it. So you can't say, I don't know what happened. But on the flip side, from a positive perspective, everybody likes to be a part of a team that satisfies client, because you know who the client is. And so if you are a team that can say, look, I satisfied this client and I'm happy to be part of it, I'm proud, that improves their motivation to work better in an organization. So having a team-based approach is great. Now, where does the matrix come in? Well, these employees could still be part of the, let's say, pension planning function. So they could still get together and talk about how they might do their work better, right? And they might actually report to two managers, perhaps. Maybe a manager in the team, but the manager of their function also. Now, the disadvantage is, of course, what happens if a client calls in to their designated team, but the team doesn't have that expertise, because now you've, from, let's say, a pension planning perspective, you've taken the pension planning team and divided them up into different teams. So that's where the matrix helps. So you can still probably call in somebody from another team to help out, because otherwise you have the issue of the expertise missing. And secondly, you know, you might have to duplicate the expertise, because if you have only one person who has an expertise in something very specific and he or she is needed too often, then, you know, then you got a problem with this person is helping out all these teams, and it breaks up the team somewhat. And so you might have to hire another expert in that area. So the point here is, you know what? Nothing comes for free. There's always trade-offs.
And there's some really important aspects, I think, that you've raised through the conversation that you've just had, JD, for me, which also interact and relate to the previous session and the conversation with Len around from a more people perspective and a more organisational design perspective. And you talked about, in many respects, accountability. How is it that we actually ensure that people within an organisation are accountable, not just for their individual process, but also have more of a systemic view of what's going on in the whole organisation, therefore have an ability to problem solve and have that cognitive ability to achieve that. But getting back to the beating heart of it, which we explored right at the beginning of what we were talking about, strategy, and how strategy is such a central part of this. So if we were to take this pension firm and say, this financial firm and say, it just did pensions, its strategy may well have been a very niche strategy in the beginning, may have been quite cost focused, but it actually then may have moved towards more of a diversified strategy, which was actually focused on responding to consumer needs and requirements. And so to do that, it needs to be more flexible, and it needs to be bringing together different products and services that met the needs of those consumers. So actually those processes within the organisation were responding actively to what was happening and what they were experiencing outside of the business.
Absolutely. So if you think about it, if they had only one insurance product that they sold, well, you know what, you don't need to do that in the UK or the USA, you could do it in China. Whereas when it becomes more complex, that's when you need that close interaction, better understanding, right? And so then your strategy would change. You would need people who have expertise in different areas and are able to provide that flexible response in a short time. And coming back to the point about people, I would say that what's happened in operations and supply chain management in the past century is, many people might remember the Charlie Chaplin movie, Modern Times, where, you know, Charlie Chaplin is a brain dead, or expected to be a brain dead employee, just doing what's mandated. Whereas today it's different. The idea is, don't leave your brains outside the building. Come in, use your brains to improve the process. So that's where the people aspect comes in, because ultimately people are part of process and they manage the process.
Yeah, so it's an interaction and an integration between both the people and the process, and the cognitive ability, and respecting that, the fact that people are individuals and they have something to contribute to solving problems and understanding how the overall business works is really important. I mean, another aspect that I'm just interested to touch on, and I know we've got sort of 4 or 5 minutes left, is the formality and informality piece here, because within smaller organisations quite often things can grow and develop, processes in particular, in very informal ways. So it can be up in our heads, it may be something that's typically not written down. What I'm wondering is when you've looked and researched into processes, how much of processes are formal, and should we, within organisations, create formal processes? How much is informal, and how does that all speak to flexibility and responsiveness?
You know, it's interesting. I think one should have formal processes for everything. And if you're a small company, it's difficult. But the problem with not having a formal process is that you have a risk of inconsistency. So as an example, I remember reading about a company that bought another company. I think it was a small company. And they thought they were getting great value. But then later they realized this company that they purchased really didn't have any formal processes, even for producing, designing and producing things. And so think about it. You suddenly have a customer saying, by the way, the company that you purchased sold me this thing, and there's something wrong with it, and it's not working. Well, how do you fix it? Because you don't know what they did, because they were very informal. So I think formal processes are very important, and I think that even where the company, the work is complex, and you do want flexibility and learning and improvement, that itself is a formal process. I think there's a great article about Toyota by Harvard professors that says even Toyota's focus on flexibility and problem solving is done in a formal way. Because formal ways means you understand it and it's consistent and it's repeatable. So the key there is, how do you create flexibility or informality through formal processes?
Yeah, no, fascinating. And something I think to take into account and to think about as we sort of grow and build our own organizations. I mean, just to sort of sum up, I suppose, JD, if there were 2 or 3 key tips that you might give entrepreneurs who are obviously building their organizations, and we've talked about the need for repeatability, scalability, consistency, and the importance for processes to play a role with that, what would be those, you know, real nuggets that you'd say, this is something that all entrepreneurs and owners and founders of organizations need to be thinking about?
Well, I think one, they need to be thinking in terms of processes. It's processes that get things done. Now, I think especially for small business owners, I think one has to understand that processes are dynamic. As you grow and your company changes, you have to change the process. In other words, there is no silver bullet process. You need to be constantly monitoring how you improve your process, which might include learning from other companies that are in your situation. So at one point in your life cycle, you would learn from one type of company. In another point in your life cycle, you might learn from another type of company.
Yep. So really sort of thinking in the case of processes. So what is it that we do and how do we deliver that, whether it be a service or a product?
And linking it to strategy.
And linking that to strategy. Yeah, that's something that's definitely come through today and also came through the previous session with Len as well on the Systemizer. So just to thank you very much, JD, because we're obviously running out of time now today. So thanks so much for participating in today's discussion.
It's been my pleasure, Simon. It's been great. Thank you.
And what we'll endeavour to do is we're going to write up a blog from today's session, and we'll link you to some of the resources that JD mentioned within the conversation around the Harvard Business Review, and particular examples of how other organisations have, first of all, explored and made explicit their processes, but how they've also evolved them over time as the business has grown and developed. So we will do that. That will be available on the Business Bunker website under Big Insights, which is something that will be tweeted out, I'm sure, after the show, and even while I'm talking now from Paul. So thanks, Paul. And looking forward to coming together to explore the next characteristic next month. So thank you so much for listening. And if you have any questions, please do get in touch. Speak to you soon.
Why?